let me go ahead and say this is, we've got Bob Chapman again today, and he's does the publication, the International Forecaster. And do you want to give your website and any kind of information to go along with that, Bob?
Sure. The International Forecast is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. We publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Runs around 35 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for people who are not on the Internet. And that goes out by the U.S. mail. If you'd like to get a free introductory copy, you can go to three different sources. The first one is our site on the Internet. That address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, Forecaster.com. Our email address, international_forecaster@yahoo.com. international_forecaster@yahoo.com. Or you can call toll free 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Well, Bob, I'm really glad that you have taken time out of your busy, busy day to inform our my audience again of what you feel is important going on in the world and the world economically. And I'll just let you go at that and see where you'd like to take it, what seems to be at the top of the list right now.
Well, there's a lot of things. First of all, for those of you who saw the House and Senate hearings yesterday, which was Wednesday, you would have seen Ron Paul spend two minutes telling the head of the Federal Reserve, which is a privately owned corporation, that you can't solve the economic woes of the country by creating money out of thin air. And he expanded for 2 minutes on that. And he's right. What the system should be is purge, but they don't want to purge the system. And the reason I don't want to do that at this time is they're going to do it later. And I believe that they're going to expand the war in the Middle East. And I think there's a good chance they'll institute another selective service draft. And if that happens, I think you'll see the culmination of what's going on, going to deflation and collapse. We're into depression already. We started the beginning of February. And we started recession 2 years before, which incidentally we predicted and nobody else did. The first signs of the prediction of inflation were a year ago by other economists. And so we're in depression. It'll trough very deeply over the next 2 years. Unemployment, which is around 15.5% right now, will be in the vicinity of 22, maybe even 25% by the end of the year. And next year it'll be over 30, which is on a parallel with the 1930s. Only we have five times more problems now than they had in the 1930s. And that depression will last for some years. The beginning part of the depression is going to be accompanied by major inflation, probably somewhere in the vicinity of 30 or 40 or 50%, because of all the money and credit that have been created by mostly the Fed as well as the U.S. Treasury in order to bail out the wealthy on Wall Street and in banking and insurance and in the elitist corporations of America. The bone that's being thrown to the public is just that, a bone.
So is that why? Do you think that's why the collapse is so slow? Is to bail these people out and to move all these assets? Or
yeah, And it's also a form of looting. They'll be looting over the next couple of years. And once unemployment gets up around 30%, you'll start to have demonstrations, which government and those behind government are preparing for right now. In fact, if you notice, Soros and some of the other donkeys who are spokesmen for the Illuminati, they get out front and start warning you that we're going to have riots. And that's just a precursor to a conditioning process, hoping that some people who are unemployed and have lost their homes and their vehicles and their jobs might just do that. And that's what we don't want them to do, because government is only looking for an excuse to implement martial law. And so that's the direction that they're headed in. And they will continue to pound and propound that possibility and trying to goad the people into doing that. And they shouldn't get roped into it. But at that time, the bottom will fall out. And then they'll allow the purge to take place. Stock market, which recently broke down through support level from 2002 and from 1994, market's trying to rally back. It could. We could get up another bear market rally. It's around 7,300 right now. It could rally back to 8,000 or 9,000. That's possible. Don't think it's probable, but it's possible. I think it's more possible that we get out and visit 6,000 to 6,600. And next year, I expect to see the Dow somewhere around 4,000. And that's going to affect a lot of things. Investments which are already down 40, 45, 50% will drop a like amount. And the forecaster on the next issue on Wednesday, I've got some statistics regarding the S&P 500 and the retirement plans. And they're deeply in trouble now, not having enough money to satisfy the people who have been promised benefits. And if the market's 7,300 and if the market drops down to 4,000, their problem's going to be even greater, because they own stocks and bonds and so on. And even in government paper, I'm watching yields starting to creep up. They tried to hold him down as long as they could, the Fed did, by entering the market and manipulating it. And evidently they've lost a handle on that. We had a low on two-year government treasury bills. The yield low was 0.70. It's 1.10 today, which is a considerable distance from where it was. And so, why is that important? Well, the 10-year, which is a note, and which traded down to around 225, was trading this morning at 296. I think they're both going to break higher. And the reason the 10 is important is because they base mortgage rates on that, and also LIBOR, which is the London Interbank Lending Rate, at which banks lend to one another. And so the rates are moving up, so that 5% loan that was available a month ago, I don't think is there anymore. And the rates on the 30-year paper, which is a mortgage loans, I should say, that rate, which is around 505, will probably move up to 525 or so shortly, and that's going to make it more difficult for qualifications for either resetting a loan or getting a new one. And so, for people who don't watch that, that's what's going on there. The dollar's been strong, but there's a specific reason for that. And that is a lot of people have sold their investments in hedge funds, and they have to get paid in dollars. And so what the hedge funds have had to do is sell assets and convert them to dollars if they weren't in dollars. And that's put upward pressure on the dollar. Now that's going to come to an end because European countries are going to have to step in and support their own currencies. And in order to do that, they have to sell dollars that they have into the market and purchase their own currency, thereby stabilizing it, maybe even make it go up a little. So I think that the
Is that kind of like an artificial way of stabilizing it? Am I following that correctly? I mean, if you're selling...
Yeah, I'll tell you. It usually works the same way. All the nations of the world want cheap currency so they can be very competitive selling goods to the United States and Europe, which are major importers of goods from other places. Europe is a major exporter. The United States is not anymore. And what these countries have done, have all lowered the value of their currency. Now, how they do that, and that, what I'm going to tell you, creates internal inflation in the countries that do and have done this. And they print up, we'll take China, they'll print up yuan, say $1 billion worth. They'll sell it yuan into the market and buy the dollar, and that weakens their currency. Well, just the opposite is going to happen in Europe very shortly as they sell dollars to buy their own currency because they don't want it to plunge. They want it low and competitive, but they don't want it in the cellar or in the ditch or wherever. And so that's what's coming on the dollar. So I think the dollar has seen its highs or close to it. And the flip side of that is that gold is the reflection of what is going on in real markets. And when gold goes up, it's because the economic and financial situation in countries, all of whom have fiat currencies, that means without backing, that, and usually that backing in currencies is usually gold. So gold has been rising for 5 years against all the currencies. And the central banks work together trying to suppress the price of gold because they don't want it going up because they don't want people to think there's a problem. It's kind of like a lie.
And it gets worse and worse and worse.
That's right. It gets worse and worse and worse. So where are we headed? We're headed to higher gold prices. We just went for to 1,000, and it's been a year since we were there, more or less. And we're getting a correction right now. It's down around probably 940, 935, 936. I think the correction should be pretty near over at this level. And because we're already talking about 4 days, and gold is down $65, that's considerable. And so I don't think it's going to go much lower, and it probably will hold in this 930 area. And if that is the case, it won't be long before it attacks 1,000 again. What we're seeing all over the world is people are fleeing to the gold, usually in the form of coins and bullion. And for about almost a year, coins and small bullion bars have been extremely difficult to obtain, particularly outside the United States. We started to see movement in the United States about 3 months ago, but it's really inconsequential when compared with the potential for coin and bullion buying in the United States. Most all of the action has been outside the United States. And so I expect that to continue, and I expect gold and silver to go higher. They're the only real money. I expect the stock market to go lower, although we could have a rally here, but I'm not too positive on that. Interest rates, real interest rates, are going to, I think, climb a bit. I think that that 10-year U.S. note, which this morning was yielding 2.96, could go to 4% by the end of the year. And, you know, for mortgage holders, that's a point higher. And put the 30-year fixed rate mortgage back at 6 to 6.25%, and that would make removing the overhead inventory of real estate that exists more difficult. And the lenders, banks, are lying about the inventory. It's holding at about 11 months supply thereabouts. It's really higher than that, because if a bank has, let's say they have 5 repossessions, and they're within a 10-block area, and there's others that are available too, they're not going to announce them all. They might say, we have a foreclosure sale here at 2 of the locations out of 10. And so they're not telling you all the foreclosures they have. And then there's this move by our new president that he wants to, via the government, which is the American taxpayer, subsidize all those people who can't make their loan payments, who never should have had no loans in the first place. And that takes the burden from the banks, the lenders. And it's assumed by the American taxpayer. So all those people who lied on the applications, and incidentally, 80 to 85% of them did lie.
Really?
Yes. Those figures came from Standard & Poor's.
What type of lies would they have given to you?
Well, my income is $123,000 a year, when in fact it was $32,500.
Yeah, but I thought they...
We'll start there. That's a felony.
But I thought they checked...
People don't realize if you lie in a loan application, it's felony fraud, and not one person was pursued.
So, I mean, I thought they checked all that out when you...
No, they had no document loans, or the lenders... Well, actually, it goes like this. There's a salesman... There's a mortgage company, which are called an originator, and they are supposed to check the things that are on the application. They didn't do that. They're too busy selling houses. Then the lender buys the mortgage from the originator, and then the lender takes it and packages it, perhaps with 10,000 other loans or parts of loans, and securitizes them into what is called CDOs, collateralized debt obligations, and then they're sold to the world. And 60% of them went to Europe, and 40%, these are round figures, in the United States. And many of the loans were not worth the paper they were written on. And in the case of subprime and ALTA loans, it was giant in numbers. What we got going on now are called option arm loans or pick and pay loans, which were people who had a loan paid interest only. And those loans started to come due about a year ago, and they got another 4 years to go. Most of them were 5 year loans. And what the people who had good credit who bought those loans, incidentally, or made those loans, they were higher income people who were gambling on the market. So if you bought an $800,000 home, instead of it appreciating to $1 million or $1.1 million, it went down to $500,000. Linda's got a problem. The problem is there's no equity in the house. So the lender walks away and probably goes into bankruptcy as well.
Okay.
So that's how that works.
But they, I mean, if being an insurance agent, and I mean, if I'm out there selling policies, and I would be still held liable for writing policies of people lying on an application, why is that not the same with banking?
Well, you're not liable. You're responsible, but you're not liable. If you lie in an insurance application, incidentally, I had a license for 25 years, it's not a criminal act. It's a civil act. And what the insurance company says is, you lied to your application, so we're not going to pay you. It's pretty simple.
And yeah, but
they have justification for doing so.
Well, I mean, the insurance companies will hold you accountable, and at least into the point of, you know, they'll fire you or whatever if you do too many of those sort of actions.
No, if you do one, they'll fire you.
Well, right.
Yeah, and but it's different. They don't have the regulations in real estate or even in banking that they have in insurance and the securities business. I was a stockbroker for 28 years, and I own my own firm for many years. And so I know what those rules are. I had every license you could have. And you weren't reliable as a broker if somebody lied in their application. How are you to know? Is everybody supposed to run around and hire a private detective to open up a new account? No. Too expensive, too cumbersome. But very simply, the insurance company just doesn't pay off.
Right. How? When I want to ask, I ran across. Was it? Who was the one that was involved in the deregulation of the banking industry and insurance?
Well, that was the Phil Graham, and there were others involved, particularly in the major banks and brokerage houses. But it was the termination of the Glass-Steagall Act, which became a law in 1933. And what it said was, we're going to put a wall between the banking business and the brokerage business because we just had a terrible situation with banks being brokers and going bankrupt. And that law stood up until 1998-99 when it was changed. And all the regulations that separated banking from brokerage and insurance, they changed back to the way they were before, and of course we had another collapse. We have a depression as a result of it. And who were the malefactors? The privately owned Federal Reserve, because they knew exactly what was going on, irrespective of what Alan Greenspan says. Alan Greenspan's a liar, like most people on Wall Street, where I worked for 28 years, and most people in Washington, which I don't have to tell you about. You already know that. So, the wall came down, and these people did things which were insane. But it's my contention, and the final culmination, that they were done deliberately. point, so that the people who are behind the scenes could formulate and execute world government. This is what they're after. And that's why I do so many programs, because I want people to know who's screwing them and how they're doing it.
Well, you know, I listen to a lot of radio, and I find out, you know, what I'm hearing is so in opposition of what people hearing coming out of our president. It's really hard to, I mean, when I talk to him, it's like, wow, I mean, do you run into that? I mean, they're on another
planet. I have for 50 years that I've been doing this, and one out of 100 people will listen. Half because they're too dumb to understand, the other half because they don't want to get involved. Well, now what's going to happen with 30% unemployment coming is they're going to be out of a job, they'll have lost their vehicles, they'll have lost their home, they're going to be in the street, and all they're going to have is a shopping cart, two screaming kids, a wife that's beside herself, their mega belongings, and an AK-47. This is what it's going to come to. And if all those listeners out there are not getting the message, you better get it fast. You should be putting away freeze-dried and dehydrated foods, things that you normally eat. You should have a water filter, and you should have a method of defending your family. And if you've got more money than that, you should have gold and silver shares, and gold and silver coins, particularly coins, as a first line of financial defense. And that's what's going on throughout the world now. The U.S. will catch up in a while. They just pay higher prices. Where's gold going? Probably in the $3,000 an ounce. Easy. Silver? Maybe $100. I don't know. It's a big guess. Where's the best place to put your money? In gold and silver-related assets. Why would you do that? Because they're the only real money in the whole world. Do you want to hold depreciating dollars? Inflation right now, unofficially, of course, is around 9%. It was 13.625% about 8 or 10 months ago. Where's it going? Probably 30 to 40%. What the other currency's going to do? Same thing.
But, you
know, some will do less.
I find that the insurance companies, you know, because I'm still licensed, are really, really pushing these annuities. What is your answer to that?
Well, it's a big profit item, number one. And the annuity is invested in stocks and bonds. Usually, in a stock company, they'll be in stocks. Now, incidentally, up until 1986, they all bought bonds. Now, the mutual companies, these are mutual life companies that sell annuities as well as different kinds of life policies. They have to put their money in bonds, so they're safer. Not that bonds will go down, they could. But I envision the money in life insurance policies, variable life, universal life, annuities, are all in the stock market. So that means that they have lost about 45 to 50% of their value in the last 20 months. And they're going to lose another 35 or 40%. So they're going to lose in the marketplace in their stock investments, if I'm correct, 75% or 80% of their money. All these guarantees they've got for such and such a return, you may as well throw them out the window. And if you look at the laws pertaining to insurance, you'll find in most states, insurance companies can approach the state and say that we need legislation. We can't pay this guaranteed 5%, which works out to $365,000 after 30 years, because of what's happened in the market. And so we must guarantee 2% now. And of course, the dutiful legislators, who are all paid off by these very same people, will trot out there and change the rules. So get ready for it. It's going to happen. And men many of these insurance companies, particularly the stock companies, are going to go under. Hartford has had to get $1 billion from the state of Connecticut. They get, if I recollect correctly, another $2 billion from the federal government, and Lincoln got $2 billion from the government. Last week, a life insurance company in Virginia went under. It was in the international forecaster. I had it in there. And so you've got to be very careful what you invest in the insurance industry now, because they're directly tied into the market. I'm not talking about the insurance on your car or your home. I mean, if a company goes under, you've got a problem, but the usually premiums that are paid year to year or month to month on a yearly basis. I'm talking about life policies of one form or another, or annuities, which are really savings plans. They're going to suffer. And don't think that they're not. What's the best kind of insurance? Decreasing term insurance. Now, the company may not be able to pay off, but again, you pay for it annually and there's no cash value. There's a life insurance value. You get a policy for $1 million, very inexpensively, maybe $250 premium a year, say you're 30 years old, and you want to cover your two kids and your wife in case you get some strange disease and die or somebody runs you over. And so you have pure insurance. I'm a big advocate of term insurance. I think it's great. And it serves a very useful purpose. It's also called mortgage insurance as well. And it covers you during the length of the mortgage in case you die. And very often, husbands and wives both get insured under term insurance. And I think that's an excellent idea. But I've never been a great lover of any kind of other life policy or annuity. And I don't advise that people do that. And particularly in this environment. And, you know, things change, so investments change. Gold and silver are the strongest investments in the world right now, irrespective of the wild fluctuations that go on in these markets. But that's the place to be. And it has been the place to be for the last 8 years. 5 or 10 years from now, it may very well not be the place to be. General Electric, which is selling for $90 a share, is now around $8. It'll probably go to $2 or $3. Will it be a good buy there? Maybe, probably. So you buy GE, and 5 or 6 years from now, at $2 or $3 a share, and if America survives financially and economically, you may have it back up at 80 again. And incidentally, General Electric is a bank. Making refrigerators and things like that is just a sideline.
I have to wonder, okay, so if you have one of these term policies and the country goes under or whatever, do you think that, you know, the people that have held on to these things are going to fare okay?
I don't know.
Don't know? How would...
I mean, some policies will be fine because they've stayed in bonds.
Mm-hmm.
If your company is a stock company, your insurance company,
mm-hmm,
and they get lots of stocks, good ones, and the Dow goes to 4,000, and they've lost 75 to 80% of their money, they can't pay off on anything. They'll be lucky if they stay in business. On the other hand, if they're in bonds like the mutual companies are, and they have to be, then you know they might take a 30 or 40% loss, but nothing like the companies that are in stock. We're experiencing something that can't even be compared to the 1930s. You've got to go back to 1873, and it was a wipeout. And we may be going to experience that again. That's when General Sherman was running everything, and he was drunk half the time. And the bankers, they did it again. You know, they were looting everything. nice suits, and they get good educations, and they look like they might know what they're talking about, and they look like such kindly people, and as they steal from you. And, you know, what I'm telling you is nothing new. It happens cyclically, over and over and over.
Well, isn't that kind
of... For the last 1,000 years.
Well, wouldn't a thief always go back to thievery? I mean, you know, you would hit a house, then you may go to another place or whatever, but if you keep hitting the same house, you know, the people are going to eventually wise up, so you put a little space and time in between so that their memories kind of fade and they can go back mm-hmm. and nail them again.
Yeah, well, in our society today, just 15 years ago, I could never be able to be on a program like this and be able to tell people up to date the truth of what's going on, because these programs weren't available.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, the internet wasn't there. I mean, I just got an article from Grenoble in France from one of our subscribers, and it's in French. I happen to read and write French. I don't speak it very well anymore because I don't speak it to anybody. But anyway, I picked it up and read it, and in fact, I read it to my wife, and they're having these big demonstrations. Grenoble is a gorgeous, very quiet, conservative town in the Alps. And it's to be, you know, the commentary by the subscriber was that, and incidentally, this man's a professor, was that they, this could be the beginning. And they were marching around the street saying, we don't want the university to change the rules. I don't know what the rule changes were, but I think one of the strong things about this demonstration, he sent pictures, was that the demonstrators' leaders were wearing Jacobin outfits. Now, the Jacobins, depending upon how you want to pronounce it, were the people who went around and rounded up the people who were going to get guillotined. I think the French are getting the message. It's going to happen all over the world.
So
why is it going to happen?
Yeah.
Because the people who planned and executed this thing know that the people are going to know. Because programs like this that go all over the world, we have hundreds, thousands of subscribers in other countries, and they're carrying the message to all the people in their country. They replay my, particularly young people under 45, we'll say, and they're on the computer all the time, and they'll go to YouTube and they discover me. Because I have tapes of my broadcasts on there. And they'll say, that's really what's happening. And so they send it to, 300 other people who are looking for the same answers as the individual who discovered my programs. And it spreads like wildfire all over the world. And the people who are engineering this bad stuff that we're going through, they know that, and they're terrified. In spite of the fact that they still want to go ahead with what they're doing because they can't pull back now. And they know this time, if they're not successful, they are not long for this world.
Well, you have an article by Lindsay Williams, or you did the article on Lindsay Williams, I found on the internet, and where do you think he plays into it? And when you're talking about these people, I mean, if they're feeding him information, why would they be doing that, saying what they're going to do?
Well, I think that's a good question, and I really don't know. He's been right about some things, but sometimes for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I really can't answer that. I just don't know. there are other people who talk in the same tone and wavelength that I do, that I've looked into, and I know that they're genuine. About Mr. Williams, I don't know.
Okay.
And there's very few people who speak to the issues that I do in the way that I do. I mean, there's nobody on radio who will tell people to arm themselves to the teeth. Because this may get nasty, and it probably will. I do a program every Thursday that is entirely to the active and retired military people, and as well as the State Department, in the ambassadorial corps throughout the world for the United States. And I've, you know, in the instant messages which come in during that particular program, I've had ambassadors get in and tell me what's going on. I mean, I'm incredulous when I hear these things. In fact, I got a letter this morning by email that said, "Oh, I see you changed your email. I missed that. This ex-ambassador who's a subscriber sent it to me." And everybody in Washington reads the International Forecaster. They pirate it. There's not much I can do about it. And I don't want to go around suing people. Look, the idea here is to let everybody know what the truth is. And, you know, I'm not interested in getting rich. I'm 73 years old. What am I going to do? Statistically, I've got 10 years to live. And shrouds have no pockets. So I can't take it with me. So I don't care about money. What's that?
I don't think the globalists want you to either.
If they knew where I was, I'm sure that they'd kill me. And they threatened me enough times since 1967. But anyway, people are afraid to do what I do. And I'm just fearless, and that's all there is to it. And I've got the knowledge.
What's the program?
And I know who all the bad guys are, and I'm going to make sure they get their just desserts before this thing is over.
So, what program are you talking about? What has the military?
That's Drew Rain's American Disposition.
Uh-huh.
And he's been off for a couple of weeks, but he's going to go back up again next week. And it's an extremely popular program. It goes all over the world. It goes through Wind Talkers,
uh-huh.
Which is, I think, the transmitter or whatever they use nowadays is in New Zealand. But I think the person who runs the shebang is in Ireland or Scotland or someplace. But anyway, they have BBC News on there and stuff like that. And it goes all over the world. Plus, that's by short wave. Plus, we're on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So a Marine might come in from Rota, Spain, where they have a big airfield, and there's a sub base there. They might come in and say, "Hey, look, you know, this is what's going on here in Rota and up in Barcelona. It's not all that far away." And is that going on anyplace else? Or we'll get IM from Paris or London or Bangkok or wherever. I mean, we get them from all over the world. We get them from, there was one guy, a colonel, and they weren't supposed to, this is Iraq, they weren't supposed to send messages to that program. Rains his program. So he says, "I'm operating my computer under my blanket." I couldn't believe it. This is a field grade officer. But there's the military knows what's going on. And I got one email from a fellow who is in special forces in a base that I won't name in the United States. And in their mess hall is a big banner that says, "Expletive, the New World Order." So they're pretty aware of what's going on. And quite frankly, the military, as it stands today, are probably among the good guys. And we want them to help us. We don't want to have to shoot at them. And we want law enforcement to help us, too, because the people who are doing this to us are in New York and Washington and Paris and London, and they got to get taken down. And we can't do it through the court system. We can't do it through our legislature because they own them. Plain and simple, they own them lock, stock, and barrel. And this will come to revolution in the United States. There's no other way. And anybody who has any foresight whatsoever can see that. And I'm not hoping for that. I hope against it because people will lose their lives. Most of them, the lives that are usually lost in those kind of things are innocents.
What do you think about this 10th Amendment group? I kind of see it as a double-edged sword in a sense, but I don't, you know.
Well, look, all powers not relegated to the federal government are hereby given to the states. Does it get any clearer than that? The federal government has been stepping all over the 10th Amendment for years, and the states are saying, we've had that. And it's going to get passed probably by 45 states, even California, if you can believe that. And you know why it got started? And I'm amazed as to what's been done in like a month. It's got started because they, the states, the inhabitants of those states, do not want gun controls. And they intend to stop the federal government at the state level by saying, if you try to overshadow our rights under the U.S. Constitution, we will secede from the Union. That's what they're telling the federal government, and the federal government has to be terrified.
Well, don't you think that they want us to go into that kind of a conflict?
Not at all.
You don't think?
No, they don't. They want to capture us easily. The states are going to cooperate with each other against the government. Federal government. That's what this is all about. You know, if you move troops into Colorado, well, you better move them into every state in the country, because the people in Colorado have made an agreement with the rest of the states. If federal troops come in and try to do something to the people of Colorado, everybody else will aid us. I picked Colorado for a reason. The United States government has 30,000 troops going into Colorado over the next 3 months.
Really? No, I haven't heard any of that. I've heard it.
Well, you know how I know? I had a woman who's married to a colonel who is stationed there, and she knows what's going on. So she writes me and tells me, and we put it in the international forecaster. I mean, the government can't do anything without us knowing about it. Not in the United States, at least.
Well, so, I mean,
there's too many friendlies out there. There's people like that. You know, I was on that program, maybe it was 9 months ago. Yeah, about 9 months ago. And we were talking about freeze-dried and dehydrated food. It was very difficult to get at that time. And I had been told by people within the industry, as well as people in Washington, that the government was buying it all for their internment camps. And I got a IM while I was on Drew Raines' show, and the lady was the wife of an officer, and she said, I just went down with a, you know, it was near the PX, with a shop. I just went down there, and where the warehouse was, there were 8 trucks, big, long trucks, she said, and they were unloading freeze-dried food from Mountain House. So, you know, let's switch back again. Why is it different this time? It's different because we got the Internet. And all of that information went out to millions and millions and millions of people all over the world. It's proof positive that government was, in fact, doing that. So you put two and two together. It's like an intelligence operation. And unfortunately for the United States government, I spent several years in counterintelligence under their tutelage. And they trained the wrong guy, I guess.
I think there's a number of you out there, and and I
wish there was more.
Yes.
I wish there were thousands. How many are there? 10 or 20?
I've
nobody's got any guts anymore.
Well, the part that I have to wonder about is when you have your international bankers and that sort who can buy a lot of these mercenaries and that sort. I have, and so many of them are so brainwashed. It's just like, how do we, are we making any inroads in that direction?
Well, there is at least, and I don't know what the exact figure is on this, but there are people who, since 1950, we'll take that as a date, just prior to the Korean conflict, as they called it, up until today, who are veterans. What that number is, I don't know, but it would have to be somewhere in the vicinity of 30 to 50 million people. And we'll take the 30. 30 million male Americans have been trained in military warfare. There are 450 million guns in the United States. If each one of these people carried three of them, they'd have plenty of weapons. Now, does the American military and does American law enforcement, which could probably put perhaps 3 or 4 or 5 million people in the field, would they like to be outnumbered 20 to 1 by people who know how to kill? I don't think so. The numbers actually are higher than that, but we'll just use that as an example. That is staggering. And the military is well aware of it. And besides, 90% of the people in the military don't want to shoot people who are Americans. Maybe the mercenaries do it, and all of them don't either. It's going to be very hard to get a force to go out and murder people.
You know, there's so many different factors taking place today, and one thought that's crossed my mind is if Joe McCarthy were resurrected today, I'm just curious as to how many people we would find in our leadership that he could go after.
Thousands who are connected to one another just in America. It's not only Congress and business and Wall Street and banking and insurance. These people are all connected that are involved. And they're all working toward world government. And, of course, today we have the Zionist influence in Washington. I mean, look at the appointees in the last administration and even more in this administration. At least half of them, if not more, are ardent Zionists. And, you know, after seeing what they've done in recent years in Israel, it's disgusting. I mean, they invaded Lebanon, and they got their pants kicked. And a very unsuccessful campaign, but they invaded them unilaterally. And then they went to Gaza because Hamas was shooting rockets at them, which they shouldn't have been doing. And they managed to kill lots of civilians and a few other people who were combatants. Now, this is not the actions of a peaceful nation. No, they say they're being threatened. Well, they're always been threatened. But Zionism does not represent the Jewish people. And Zionism, and believe me, I lived in Europe for years. I speak five languages. Zionism is as close to Nazism as I've ever seen. And I don't like it one bit. And a lot of Jewish people don't either. And that influence in Washington is not good. It's very unhealthy to have as many of those people in government as there are. And some of them are very, very vocal and strident. In fact, I saw one of them here on the news this morning. I mean, this guy is a nutcase, as far as I'm concerned. And these influences shouldn't exist in such numbers in the operations either in our government or behind the scenes.
I just recently watched the movie Sicko, and I don't know the intent at all. I mean, I do know the intent, but at the same time, I'm not sure how aware Michael Moore is to the process that I see taking place with the healthcare system. I feel like it is being used in a socialistic way. And when he did his interview with Tony Benn kept talking about democracy, democracy. And I realized that the way he was using it was really a in replacement of the word socialism. Does that?
And that's true.
Uh-huh. And so here we are thinking we're spreading democracy, and they're really spreading socialism. And then that socialism ends up being not the type of socialism that people think that they're, you know, grabbing hold of if they think it's humanitarian. Does that make sense?
Well, it's nothing. It makes a lot of sense. And, when you have socialism, it makes you easier to control people because of the benefit structure. And in a totalitarian socialism like fascism, which is socialist-based, you have dictatorialism, and the benefits are used as a sword. So in other words, if Adolf Hitler says you really can't say anything nasty about the state, and you do, well, they cut your benefits off. And if that isn't good enough, don't keep your mouth shut, off you go to a camp. And if you're like me, with my background, I don't even get the luxury of the first two. They just take me out and shoot me. And that's what this is all headed towards.
And the
American people don't get it. They, half the people in America, whether you want to like to hear this or not, they are illiterate. They're dumb. They're stupid. And they may think that they're smart, but they're not. And that shows in the way that they react to things. They don't have any depth of knowledge. They don't know how to look at things and analyze them. And we wouldn't expect them to. It's unfortunate they have a vote, but they do. The other half are intellectually responsible, but many of them don't respond until they have to. And many of them will respond when they have to. It's too bad they can't get in to gear now to understand and stop what's going on. And that's why I do 20 hours of programming every week on radio and satellite and internet and so on and so forth, to help people understand that this really is happening. And I won't make this stuff up.
You know, and I find when you're talking about that group, that's the ones that do have the knowledge and that sort, I find it's kind of like trying to argue with a doctor and who's been schooled and doesn't understand, or even and has somewhat been poisoned from alternative health care. I find that across the board in numerous aspects among the educated. Do you?
It's a messiah complex. They're good at what they do in their field, and they're supposed to know about everything. And they don't.
Yeah.
You have to understand what your strengths are and your weaknesses. Doctors think that they can do just about everything because they're very bright. And that doesn't naturally follow. Some can, but very few.
And I wanted to cover...
They get into things like engineering, they can't do it. They get things like business, they can't do it. That's why they hire business management. I mean, I couldn't go in and run General Motors. I'm just not trained for it. My IQ is 185, but that doesn't mean I can go and do it. So So you have to understand your strengths and weaknesses. If somebody asked me to go out and help build a house over here, I'd say, gee, I'll carry the nails and the water and the lumber, but don't ask me to do that other stuff because I'll screw it up on you.
Well, that's a part of it.
So you have to understand what you can and you can't do.
Right, and that's a part of that system that's been built from day one where they compartmentalize everybody so that they don't know that. And that, I mean, that's really built into it.
Well, that's a good point because everybody's equal, which is certainly not the case. And you have to have confidence in yourself. Well, yeah, you do, but not false confidence. And they pump these kids full of this crap in school, and they go out in the world, and they can't get a job. The degree does them no good anymore, and that's happening right now. And they're saying, well, what happened? What happened is it really didn't teach you very much.
It was very limited.
You learned how to take tests and get grades, and all it showed a future employer was the fact that you could follow orders and you might conceivably be able to do a job.
Well, I get
that. That's how bad it is. They have been giving out college diplomas like popcorn for years. Half the people in universities fall out after the first, second year. The other half of them shouldn't even be in there.
Well, I got tickled.
Everybody shouldn't have a college education because they don't belong there.
Right.
They belong doing other things.
Well, I got tickled.
We don't even hardly have any vocational schools left. Why? Because everybody's supposed to be a space scientist or a doctor or an Einstein or something. Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
Well, when you got your SEC license and I got mine, one of the things that was very apparent when I got done with it is that I went through all this intensive schooling, and when I got out, they didn't train us in anything about the product or how to sell it. And you're a salesman. And they didn't train you in sales. They trained you in the rules of an industry. And now looking back at it, I realize, well, the first thing that you see when you get out there is many of them don't even follow those rules.
And on top of that, 95% of them are never used at all. And the same thing goes on in the brokerage business today with the tests that they give for a stockbroker. It has nothing to do with reality.
Right.
Most brokers today have to take the test 3 times to pass it. and they're very intelligent human beings. Why? Because you've got a bunch of dingbats at the Securities Exchange Commission who were told that the 13-year-old scam, not a Ponzi scheme, a scam. They were told 10 years ago that Madoff was a scam. And they protected him. Believe me, they did. And then came along Stanford. And they protected him. Because they were told to. What kind of a government do we have?
Well, that's a part of those regulation things. Is first they sell everybody on coming in and regulating the industry, and then you find out that the industry really protects those that are the criminals, so they're not really keeping them out. And in the meantime, it's keeping out the people that are the part timers or that don't want to have any kind of thinking outside of the box.
Well, I have been harassed by government for 40 years. And they've used the SEC and NSD and ESD and state regulators to do it. When I owned my brokerage firm, I had all three of them in my office perpetually. I had a small firm. My attorney fees just for that alone and accounting fees were $500,000 a year. They did everything possible to put me out of business because my specialty was gold and silver shares, and I wrote a newsletter that got wide circulation, and I also published the Gary Allen report. Gary Allen and I did together, and Gary wrote Nunday Call It Conspiracy, which was a very famous book, and they didn't like my politics. And I have gone through professional hell for almost 50 years.
And that's what you had to pick
and,
up?
And they've never let up. They never let up. And my competitors even helped them, trying to come up with ways to make my life miserable. I mean, I've been sued and charged and everything else. And it's all come to nothing. But what is it for? It's to shut me up. To shut down my publication.
Right. And that's sad, because that's what kills a lot of the entrepreneurship or the people, you know, coming up with new and inventive ideas, because when those people don't fit in that box of those that regulate it, then they disappear or have to go underground.
Well, with me, they got a bad penny, because I ain't disappearing, and I'm going to do this until either Washington falls or I drop dead.
Well, we again had another interesting conversation, getting into all the economic woes and things taking place in the world. And I want to thank you again, Bob, for coming on Truth Quest here. And we hope to have you back again. And keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much, and just let me know when.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot.